This is Richard Miles with Board Game Authority, and today I have the privilege of talking with
Jamie Stegmeyer of Stonemeyer Games.
All right, well, let's jump into some Stonemeyer Games news. 2015, it seems like we'll see at least two games from Stonemeyer Games. We'll see Between Two Cities and Scythe. Let's talk about Between Two Cities.
Yeah.
This game will actually come out before Scythe, but I haven't seen as much hype surrounding it. Have you seen a difference as well from Between Two Cities and Scythe, and why do you think that would be?
Well, yeah, they're very different games. I mean, I wish Between Two Cities would have gotten as much attention and excitement and hype as Scythe. But part of it is that we didn't have art for Between Two Cities until fairly recently, and it was on the there's a Board Game Geek list for like games that people are most excited about in 2015, and it's near the, at least in terms of nominations, it was near the top of that list. It was definitely in the top 20, and it's that vote is currently happening. So my sense is that a lot of people are excited about it. It's just not like it's a gateway game, so it's like it getting super super excited about Settlers of Catan,
right?
Like when it came out, like it might end up being a game that hits the table all the time, but you're going to get more excited about the Star Wars Imperial Assault game.
Just right, yep.
Even if you don't buy it because it's so expensive, you know?
Sure.
So I would kind of put it in that category of excitement and hype. This is the first game that we're publishing that wasn't designed by me, basically, right?
And do you think that has anything to do with the hype or lack thereof?
No, I don't. I mean, that's a good question. And it was my concern. Like, one of the major discussions we had early on was... So the designers are Ben Rossett and Matthew O'Malley. They're both talented designers. They have a few games published. And I knew going into it that I would be developing the game, which is essentially like, you know, the designers design the game and a developer comes in and hones the game and helps balance it and makes it better, makes every element of it interesting and fun. At least that's the goal, right?
Yep.
So one of the discussions we had early on was, should my name go on the box as like developed by Jamie Stegmeyer? And so we had a big debate about it. And the only reason that may sound egotistical, ego wise, I don't care at all about having my name on the box, but I thought if it helped sell it to our followers or the Stonemeyer followers, if that would help, then I would put it on there.
Right.
But what we ended up determining was that probably wouldn't matter. Like all the people who already follow us, I could directly tell them through the Kickstarter page or through my e-newsletter that I was involved in the process and that I didn't need to put my name on the box to ensure that that was communicated.
Since this will be the first game that is just kind of published by Stonemeyer Games, that's not a Jamie Stegmeyer and Alan Stone game, do you feel this is like pivotal to the future and the success of Stonemeyer Games?
I do think it's a pivotal point for a couple reasons. The main reason is that I have realized that, well, I've known this for a while, designing a game takes an immense amount of time. And as we expand our portfolio, it's simply not possible for me to design all of our games. I don't think we could be a sustainable business if we did that. And plus, I spent the last year working on over a dozen games, and none of them were really good enough to publish. So me being a game designer doesn't mean that I can continue to design what I hope to be good games. Like, I'm only going to publish the good ones, right?
Right.
In that sense, it's a pivotal move for us. I think it's also pivotal because if it's successful, I think it will help us attract some other really talented designers so we can publish some other really great games. That's my hope.
Yeah, yeah. You guys are setting the bar pretty high. And actually, if we can segue just a little bit over to Viticulture, when you're playing that game with friends, are there any weird things that come out of the tokens, the wooden tokens, and what people make out of them?
Is there like I don't even know if I want... I can't think of any, no. Do your friends, is there anything in particular they make?
Yeah, so they... a few things. One person made a Pope Mobile. And so he put the yoke and the irrigation tower kind of on top of each other, because the yoke looks like it has wheels. And so he made a Pope Mobile, and all the time he was driving around his Pope Mobile through the game. Also, there were, and I don't know if this has happened to you, if this was intentional, unintentional, but there were a lot of cock jokes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Because of the rooster token.
Right.
So it took, like 3 games. I played 3 games, no cock jokes. And then somehow the group I was playing with on my third game, they just wouldn't stop. And this group of people, they were all older than me. So it wasn't like maturity as far as age goes anyway. And actually a female was the first person, guys usually are labeled more immature, but it was a female that brought up the first cock joke.
Wow.
She was like, "Get your hands off my cock," or something like that. Because somebody picked up the wrong one or whatever. And then it just started from there. It just started unraveling with all kind of cock jokes. Does that happen at your table?
It's happened a few times. And I'm kind of glad that people can have fun with it in that way. Like, I don't think that would have happened if the roosters were cubes.
No, it wouldn't. Not at all. If they were alarm clocks or anything else,
Right.
no. Yeah, I was very curious if that happened at your
You know,
table.
it probably hasn't happened enough. And the next time we'll play, I'll start the jokes.
Yeah. About half the times I played the game, I played it 6 or 7 times now. Half the times there's at least one, if not two people that are confused about the number of trellises that a player has to have because there are three depicted on the player board, like just as artwork. I've had to explain this 3 or 4 times to different people that you don't have to buy more than one.
Interesting.
I just wanted to see if that has ever happened.
That's actually, I've heard some, it's always, that's always interesting to me to hear when people look at the art and transfer it to the mechanisms. I've actually never heard that one in particular. One of the things I have heard that I just didn't think about at all. Have you ever played a game called Kalis?
No, I don't think I've heard of that actually.
So Kalis is like, it's like a classic worker placement game, and a key part of the board is this road, this winding road. And when you place workers, where they are on the road matters. Because like you place all your workers and then you activate them based on where they are on the road.
Right.
And on Viticulture, on the board, there's a road on the art, and it's just art. Like the road doesn't mean anything. The important part of the board are the seasons, right? So you have
Right.
like the summer actions, the winter actions. But and I actually only heard this once. I wonder if more people have been confused by this. But one person asked me, do I have to activate them on this road? And they were transferring this idea that they learned playing Kalis that was so ingrained in them onto this art that was just meant to be background art. I mean, it's interesting that you said that, and it's a good reminder to me and maybe other designers too, that the little things in art have a big impact on how people perceive or play the game.
Yeah. So as people who have followed Stonemaier Games and are backers of the Tuscany expansion know, there were a few tiles that were misprinted.
Yeah.
What's the first thing that goes through your mind when you find out something like that?
I was devastated by it. I mean, my I it devastated and embarrassed that I didn't check it because it was basically a punch board where the front of the punch board, I mean, it matched the back, but the back was flipped on a vertical axis, one direction. And so the tiles in the middle were correct, but the tiles on the left or the right had one little thing that was wrong about it. And my initial reaction, really, I was embarrassed and devastated because I knew that that was something I needed to check in the soft proofs that I got from the printer, and somehow I didn't do it. And I mean, right away it was a good reminder to me that I really need to get more people to look at those soft proofs, not the digital files, because this would have never, it would be impossible to catch this mistake on a digital file, but you could catch it on a soft proof. Once I like kind of got over my own embarrassment, it came to terms with the idea that it really is a very, very small misprint in the way that it impacts the game. And so once realized that, I kind of had to figure out how do I approach this with backers, because I don't want to make them think that their game is ruined by this very, very small, I mean, I'm not going to say it's a small mistake. It's an embarrassing mistake that has a very small impact on the game. And what I ended up doing, as you know, is that I offered to print stickers, little stickers to place on the back of the tile where the misprint happens. It's a little Lyra icon that needs to be replaced with a different Lyra icon. The tiles aren't, normally I wouldn't offer stickers, but the tiles aren't ever shuffled. Every player always has the same three property tiles.
Right.
Like when you shuffle something, you don't want stickers on it because the stickers will catch on one another. But that never happened. So I was very comfortable sending out stickers as a replacement rather than replacement tiles, which would be an enormous expense and unnecessary for the level of mistake that this was. And so I offer these free stickers to anyone who wanted them. We would print them at our expense. We would ship them at our expense. How did you react to that whole process and that solution?
I am of the mindset that I would rather support the publisher that I chose to buy a game with by not making them shell out that money. Like that, right. That was my, that was how I looked at it. And I saw that you did that, and that is great, applaudable customer service. But I know that there's a cost, and I might not have to pay for it, but I know that you will, and I want you to keep making good games, so I'm not going to burden you, so to speak, with that additional cost. In your email, you said just remember that if it's a 5, it's supposed to be a 5. If it's a 7, it's supposed to be a 7. And I think I can do that. And if I if I can't do that, you did provide files that I can print myself and kind of stick on there myself. So if it comes to it, I got that file. I'll do that.
And we put it on the Board Game Geek store as well. I think they're supposed to go up tomorrow. They have this, like, we're not trying to profit off that. It's just we send it to Board Game Geek, and they'll send it to you for, I think it's like $2.
Right.
And that goes to them. It doesn't go to us.
That's cool. If you don't want to print out yourself, that is another option. I do like that. This question is from Woody Harris, a friend of mine. He is a therapist, and he uses games during therapy. He's actually going to do a panel at this year's Gen Con. I think it's on that subject, but I could be mistaken. But he wants to know if you are aware of any of your games being used for therapeutic or otherwise kind of beneficial purposes that aren't just for gaming fun.
Yeah, I like that question a lot. And it's actually something my business partner, Alan, he is also a therapist that uses games in therapy. So if Woody's looking for someone else to be on his panel, Alan might be interested in that.
That's cool. Yeah.
So we've talked about it. The way Alan uses the game, he does not use our games because he works with kids usually between 8 and 12, somewhere in that range. And they usually play really, really light games. They kind of distract the kid a little bit so they can talk freely, like while they're playing Candyland or
exactly.
Whatever.
Yep.
Right? However, I have heard from, well, there's one specific backer who wrote me who has a child with some learning disabilities. I think he's around 8 or 9. Learning disabilities and communication difficulties. But he knows this kid is like a smart kid. It just doesn't come through very often. And so he sat down with him. And I think they were playing Euphoria. And I mean, the first game, his kid struggled a little bit to figure out how the game played. But then he said, and this really got me when I read this, there was a moment when playing the game when he just saw the gear, everything just clicked. I'm sure you've had that experience playing the game for the first time too, where you're kind of just struggling and then it clicks. And yep. He saw that in his kid. He saw it click and it all came together. And so the kid played really well that game. He played Euphoria many times since with a lot of different strategies. And it was really neat for this guy to be able to kind of communicate with his own kid through this game and to see his kid really excel at something when he struggled with a lot of other academic challenges. And so, I mean, I know that's just one anecdotal example, but it meant a lot to me when I heard that.
Yeah, no, that's cool. And it has to be kind of uplifting that, you know, your game was a part of that.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, I talk about on my blog, I talk about introversion and extroversion a lot. And I think that maybe games provide a really healthy platform for introverts or people who maybe don't have the best social skills because it gives us this construct to work around and to communicate with people. So I can definitely see that. I think games are a great way to connect with people for people who maybe aren't great at connecting with people.
Yeah, no, for me it is. I'm a huge introvert. It is very difficult for me in large gatherings and parties or whatnot. But hey, now there's a game on the table.
Right.
It's all of a sudden slightly easier.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. We really didn't get back to Between Two Cities. If there's anything else you want to talk about that, we certainly can.
Between Two Cities is launching on Kickstarter on February 25th. It's designed by two awesome guys, Ben Rossett and Matthew O'Malley, and it was developed by me into its current form. And the reason that we published this game, the reason that we're really excited about it, is that it's a competitive game where there's only one winner, but the core of the game is such that you are cooperating with players on your left and right to build two cities, one city with a person on your left, one on the right. And so it gives you that feeling of togetherness and kind of partnership that you get in a cooperative game, but you are still individually trying to win. So if that appeals to anyone, I think they'll really enjoy the game.
Awesome. All right. Well, we will be looking out for Between Two Cities, February 25th. Jamie, thank you for taking the time to speak with me today. It's always my pleasure.
Yeah, it was great to talk with you, Richard.
I've been your host, Richard Miles, for BoardGameAuthority.com. My guest today was Jamie Stagmeyer of Stonemeyer Games. You can find this podcast on iTunes. Subscribe, please. That would make me very happy. You can also connect via Twitter at BoardGameAuth, BoardGameAuth. We have a Facebook page. That's facebook.com/BoardGameAuthority. And as always, there's our website, www.BoardGameAuthority.com. Drop us a line. We would love to hear from you. Tell us who you'd like me to interview next, or tell me that you should be the next guest. I would love to hear from you. Until next time, game on.